welcome to the Nutrition Awareness Podcast, co-hosted by yours truly, Kate Richardson
and Megan Pacheci. We're two registered dietitians here to make your life easier by debunking diet myths, sharing scientific information about nutrition, and keeping you motivated to reach your goals.
We want to teach you everything we know by giving you real life examples of how we've helped our combined thousands of clients transform their lives, lose weight, and get healthy without having to go on another cookie cutter diet.
On this podcast, we'll be giving you our best advice, strategies, and mindset shifts so you too can reach your goals using food and, most importantly, enjoy the process.
Welcome back to the Nutrition Awareness Podcast, everybody. I am so excited because we've got a brilliant repeat guest on the podcast today to share some updated information and insight about the ever-evolving field of obesity medicine. So, Dr. Shaw, could you please introduce yourself and tell the audience who you are?
Hi. So thanks for having me. I am Dr. Nikita Shaw. I am an obesity medicine physician based in Orlando, Florida, and I'm the founder of Weight Sense, where I practice science-based medicine and personalized obesity treatment. The field of obesity medicine has been ever evolving, and I think we're finally having access to tools that people are excited about because these newer medications are giving them the results they've been seeking for most of their lives. So this is a great time to be an obesity medicine doctor.
Yeah, and a great time to be a dietitian too. And I wanted to share with the audience, you know, my personal intention with this podcast. As a registered dietitian, I want to learn as much as I can from obesity medicine specialists, and I want to create this space that is non-judgmental for anybody who is struggling with obesity or struggling with type 2 diabetes, insulin resistance, and just wants to get more information to find out if seeking out medical intervention is right for them. So Dr. Shaw, could you first start off by telling me and the audience what obesity medicine is and what it is not?
Yeah. So I'm going to start off with just explaining what obesity is. So obesity is a medical condition where excessive adipose tissue or fat cells impact your health. So this is increasing the risk. These fat cells themselves are increasing the risk of type 2 diabetes, heart disease, high blood pressure, fatty liver, menstrual irregularities, and joint problems. And we diagnose this in clinic not by extensive labs or some far-fetched tools. We actually diagnose this as obesity medicine doctors using essentially like our basic lab panels, and we get a really thorough history, and we try to piece together during our exam and evaluation, are these conditions that the person is having faced with their associated with the fat cells or adipose tissue, and then we can land on a diagnosis of obesity. We use a poor marker, and I think you and I have talked about this before, of BMI. And truly, BMI is just the tool that we've developed in studies. In my office, I do use body composition. I think that's a better marker to see how someone's weight and fat mass is impacting their health. But if we just stick with BMI, a BMI of 30 would be classified as somebody having obesity, or a BMI of 27 plus medical conditions would be overweight plus medical conditions, and that would allow someone to have access to anti-obesity medications. Certain ethnic groups have different BMI cut points, so that threshold can be lower. And generally, what I think about is pre-overweight or pre-obesity, starting at a BMI of 25, I think we should really start evaluating someone's health, and maybe they just need a lifestyle improvement. When we get to a BMI of 27 and somebody is facing medical conditions or medical complications, we really should start thinking about broadening our tool set from lifestyle interventions such as healthy eating, physical activity, and behavior therapy, and really start getting into the pharmacological management. When somebody has a BMI of greater than 35 with medical conditions, and then greater than 40, we should start also discussing surgical options. Truly, this is to improve somebody's health and well-being, and it's never a one-size-fits-all, so that's why the tagline is personalized obesity treatment. I'm not here to force anybody to do anything they don't want to do. So we're here to make sure that the treatment we're offering is going to help someone's health and well-being.
Right. And I like that yours is personalized because that's how our practice rolls too. We want people to figure out a personalized approach to nutrition and never force somebody to do something that isn't going to jive with their lifestyle or what they're comfortable with. How long have you been a obesity medical specialist?
You know, so I've been doing obesity medicine since residency, and so it's basically since 2016 when I started struggling with my own weight, and I realized that all the diet advice I was told was not making sense. So that meant that the diet advice I was giving my patients wasn't making sense. So I started to seek out the tools and resources and education to really help myself lose the 30 pounds that I had been struggling with through becoming pregnant, being a resident, entering, like moving, getting married, all those things in life that affect our body weight and our body weight set point. So since 2016, and then I got certified, I had to look at the diplomas, gosh, way before these medications were there.
Yeah.
There's a number, but it's been some years. So yeah.
Amazing. Well, I like going to somebody who has been through the struggle that I currently have. You know, I don't want to go to a mental health professional who has never struggled with the same kind of mental health issues that I have, because it's just different. You want to be able to talk to someone who knows and can empathize with weight. And I have the same thing. You know, I had struggled with my weight in my early adolescence, and that's what inspired me to become a registered dietitian.
Yeah.
You've been in the field for a long time. You've seen things. You have a really strong understanding of obesity medicine and how the diagnosis of obesity can and should be treated. When, you know, throughout your work as an obesity doctor, what results or side effects and experiences can someone expect from taking weight loss medications? I'm sure there's a spectrum, but that's going to be questions that I get as a dietitian when somebody's trying to just say lose weight. They ask me, well, what can I expect?
Like, yeah.
Where do we start?
So I like to break it out. Let me break that up a little bit. So first, like, what are we talking about when we're talking about prescription weight loss medications? We're not talking about over-the-counter, like weight loss supplements that are sold. We're talking about prescription medicines. There are two main classes that I break them down into. Our older classes of medications, I label them as just our classic anti-obesity medicines. Our newer agents, the injectables, I classify them as highly effective anti-obesity medications. Medicines are designed to overcome barriers people face when they're losing weight. So they're medical tools designed to improve health, and they're not cheating. So ideally, if there are side effects, we want them managed, or we want to guide people along the fact that, like, are they tolerable or not? And if there are severe side effects, we have to discontinue the medicine. So I sometimes explain it to patients as this is maybe a dating game where we try something, and if it's not a fit, we're not going to marry it, but we're looking for something that is a fit for them. And ideally, these are tools that are designed to help overcome the physiological barriers that occur when you're losing weight. So such as increased food cravings, hunger, lack of satiety. And these changes or these challenges are rooted in human biology, and they're not personal flaws. So no, if we're looking at a biological aspect of it, if we're trying to lose weight, that's truly going against like everything our genes were designed to do, or genes were designed to keep weight on. So if we're losing it, then there are so many physiological processes that play that promote weight recurrence. And so that's just the body doing what it's been designed to do all this time. And I think we really need to approach it that way and explain that to patients. There's two classes of medicine. Each one has a different effectiveness rate. So the biggest complaint I get from people is that I tried such and such medicine, I used it, and then it stopped working. It didn't stop working, it just reached its therapeutic potential. So we want to educate people when we're starting it. It's like, if I'm giving you a high blood pressure medicine, I'm not expecting your blood pressure to go infinitely down to zero. I'm looking for a therapeutic target. So when I am advising my patients on which medications I'm prescribing, I'm also advising them on, is this in line with what they view their best weight as? And so those older medications, I really try to say, we're looking at a 5 to 10% total body weight change, pairing that medication with the lifestyle changes. Sometimes that breaks some hearts, like when we like have that reality and that talk. But what I say is, isn't it beautiful to lose like 5 to 10% of your total body weight, stop that weight recurrence from happening, stop the weight gain, and you do get a health benefit. And it can be okay to like just let it be there, because like just like I can't make somebody taller, I can't always bring them down to a weight that they remember or they feel is appropriate for them.
That's a conversation I have to have a lot with people who aren't or maybe are on a weight loss injection, which is, what is realistic for you? It's okay to have a dream and a desire, but perhaps your pre-baby weight when you were 25 isn't realistic when you are 55. And that's okay. But you're right. I like how you phrase that, is sometimes we have to break a few hearts, change the expectations, but then also look for the benefits. What else can happen when you lose that 5 to 10% body weight? What are you free from? And I think a lot of that would be what I hear is the food noise or the obsession around food. What I hear from the patients and clients that I have who are on a weight loss injection is it gives them the freedom and mental space to focus on building that healthy lifestyle and becoming this person they want to be. So maybe they're not at that target weight yet, but they have the energy to go do X, Y, Z because they're not distracted by thoughts of food or poor body like they were.
So now our injectable medications, so we're talking about Saxenda, Wegovy, and Zepbound. They are, Saxenda and Wegovy are GLP agonist. These injectables have a diabetes treatment component. So essentially what happens is we bring out drugs, they're studied for diabetes, maybe simultaneously also being studied in terms of weight. The medication that treats diabetes comes out first, then it's rebranded and it receives approval for obesity. So when we're talking about Wegovy / Ozempic, the generic component is semaglutide, and I'm just speaking about branded medications, Saxenda / liraglutide, Victoza for diabetes, and then Zepbound / Mounjaro or tirzepatide. So what sets GLP-1 agonists apart, such as Wegovy and Saxenda, is they regulate both blood sugar and appetite. There is an increase in satiety, so that fullness factor goes up, which helps that reward brain kind of simmer down. So if you're looking at levers in the brain, if you're full, now all of a sudden that cookie doesn't seem appealing to you. And if you're full, you can stop at one slice of pizza, which is magical.
Mm-hmm.
The newest medication, Zepbound, goes a step further because it doesn't only target the GLP-1 receptors, but also the GIP. So it's a double incretin. So it does more work. In terms of how much weight loss people can expect, this conversation's fun. So when we are starting the medicine, I think social media has wired us to think that everybody just drops weight like instantly. Yeah. But in all the trials, there is a ramp up period. So that ramp up period, approximately every four weeks, the dose is being adjusted or increased. So I'll start with Wegovy. We start off at 0.25 milligrams. We're not blasting them with the effective dose of 2.4 milligrams. We are titrating up slowly. So during that titration process, we're trying to titrate up to where we can get them to a therapeutic level while managing the side effects. And I think at that point, I call it like Goldilocks in the three beds, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have one group of people, they get into the bed, it's perfect for them. They can go up every 4 weeks and they feel great. There's no issues. And they just like meet the norm and they follow the curve with the trials just right. Like they lose 5% of their total body weight at X amount of time. By 4 months, they've lost 10% of their total body weight. It's 62 weeks that it takes to lose that 15% total body weight. So it's more than a year and then some months, right? So I tell people it's like a year and a season that we're looking at. So turn out all the noise. Like you're not going to have your biggest weight loss experience right now. We're looking at it for the long haul, and we have to get the medication to a dose and then maintain it for chronic use. And I know we're going to talk about that later. On the flip side, some people are very sensitive to the medications. And the biggest reason for discontinuation on these class is nausea, GI upset. We can space medicine out, so you may not fall into that same category of like, I go up every 4 weeks. Like maybe you need to hold a dose a little bit longer. And then I have some other people, I think they just have guts of steel and they never feel anything on any dose adjustment. And it's just like marvelous. Like, how does this not affect you? There's no constipation, there's no nausea, no GI things, and they're fine. So first 4 months or so, or first 4 to 6 months is getting you to a therapeutic level of the medication, managing side effects. And then we're really looking to see, are you matching the trends with weight loss? You asked about some people who do not lose weight. And then you also asked me, or when we were speaking earlier, about what are the lifestyle habits that need to occur with these medicines. So the first is all the studies were done with a reduced calorie diet. So reducing the intake by 500 calories and then engaging in 150 minutes of cardio, 150 minutes of cardiovascular activity. When people are meeting with us, even 150 minutes may be too much. And sometimes the satiety and the fullness increases. So their caloric intake might actually reduce beyond the 500 calories. It may be that they're hitting like 43% reduction in their food intake. Yeah. So what I find in clinical practice outside of the studies is I am harping on the same things you're harping on, which is protein and fiber. Mm-hmm. So if I don't have all that food noise anymore that a patient may no longer be experiencing when it comes to the processed carbohydrates, that's like a win. And now we can really use our mental fortitude to make sure we're getting protein, make sure we're getting fiber at our meals. We're staying hydrated. So when hunger goes down, thirst also goes down. So we really want to make sure we're getting hydrated. I tell patients, we're not trying to waterboard you. So you don't have to go like with buy the gallons of water, just like, you know, try to get 60 to 80, maybe 90 ounces of water, like whatever feels right for them. I'm not trying to gag people and have reflux either.
You know, can I, if you don't mind saying something, one thing I've noticed, when I'm talking to people who are on a weight loss injection, there is some initial disbelief and excitement that they can go all day long without eating. And it's like they'll ride the wave. I can think of one client I have in particular who's just really excited by not wanting to eat. And she had this belief that to lose weight, she shouldn't eat. And it's a good thing. This is the long-term solution. And this is great. But we had to do a lot of education and understand that, yes, we are using this medication to help you eat less, but we don't want to lose too much weight too fast. We don't want to skip meals because then you're going to be missing out on that protein, all those nutrients from food that help with your gut microbiome. If you're missing out on protein, you could be losing muscle mass and then you won't look and feel the way you really want to.
Yes. So
it can take a bit of recalibrating somebody's expectations of what a day of eating should look like for them. And it can be a tough pill to swallow because some people are still believing that they should just eat as little as possible to be successful. So we have to really make sure they're getting doses of protein consistently throughout the day, making sure it's enough protein. If they're not feeling really hungry, if it's hard for them, we have to think of more palatable ways to consume protein, whether it's a drink or smoothie or small frequent meals. So it has to be really tailored and personalized, but
exactly.
We're not going all day without eating.
Yeah. And I tell people like there's things that we can see and there's things that we can't see. So I can't see what's happening to your bones unless I'm ordering a DEXA scan. And we're in this for the long haul. We're in this to make sure you're feeling well and healthy. So if your energy levels are tanking, then you're likely not consuming enough. In terms of dietary measures, there's so many ways you can go about this. Like maybe some people do great having 2 to 3 meals. Maybe some people need the 5. Maybe some people need to just really focus on the protein and the fiber. And then some people, if they're like really weak and low on their energy, but they are eating, maybe they really need to make an effort to bring in the complex carbs. So there's so much, but I think that really listening to the person and them working with somebody and not just getting in their own heads, because we are trying to reverse like years sometimes of the yo-yo dieting. Yeah. Like decades would be more appropriate. Yep.
You know, and that's a great point because I can think of a few people right now off the top of my head, and everybody that I have who is on some kind of weight loss medication, they're so different. You know, I have one guy who's doing a lot of lifting. He's doing a lot of strength training. even though he's losing weight on the medication, I want him eating complex carbohydrates mm-hmm. more than my other woman who was on Wegovy, and she's a bit more sedentary. She does Pilates now and then, and she doesn't need quite as much complex carbohydrates to maintain health and
exactly.
wellness. So we do need to make sure that we look at the whole person's lifestyle and what their long-term goals are. Because if we're strictly looking at losing weight and body fat and, fixing our lab values as quickly or as efficiently as possible, okay, that might be different than the guy who's trying to build a lot of muscle tissue and get strong in the gym. Well, also
exactly. So it's a delicate balance. And I think we just want to keep the true guidelines of like the studies in mind. So in terms of pharmacology, somebody may not be losing weight the way the studies show. And that means that we need to look a little bit further. So my job is also as I'm meeting with patients, if they're not meeting what I think is effective, but I still see a benefit of their GLP-1 or their Zepbound, then I may think, do I need to add on another pharmacological agent? So this is like blood pressure and diabetes, even mood conditions. Sometimes we need more than one medication to help along. So that's what I do when sometimes people get stuck, or do we need to switch? So if there are side effects, sometimes it's not going up to the stronger agent. Sometimes it's going down to something like Saxenda. But really, when you're working with an obesity medicine doctor, you're getting that benefit of like they've dealt with these medicines for a good time. They understand the mechanism of action, and then they can use other tools, other medical tools to help. And I'm going to put in a plug in here for bariatric surgery, bariatric and metabolic surgery. There are so many reasons that people may feel that it's not right for them. But then there are those that are still curious if it's a real viable option. And I think that if you have a weight set point that you want to reach that is beyond like 20% of your total body weight. So when someone comes in and says, I want to lose 70 pounds, I want to lose 100 pounds, generally speaking, these medications don't produce that result. Mm-hmm. And so if we're looking really at that number to improve someone's health, we should consider a referral to a bariatric surgeon. If somebody doesn't want to, that's okay. We're here for them. And I tell them that we'll use medications to our best ability and see where you go, because I have no crystal ball to know where the end is going to be, but we can keep seeing how this is going to work. And if we ever hit a point where we've reached therapeutic potential and the person is still not at their best weight, then we need to start considering maybe a referral to a surgeon is appropriate.
I have a question about that. Just curious if you see this, because I can think of one woman right now who, before she went on semaglutide, I believe she got a compound semaglutide mm-hmm. from an IV clinic, which we may or may not talk about, but she was really not losing a lot of weight. We got her metabolism tested and her metabolism was really low, meaning it was low because she had been yo-yo dieting her whole life, losing weight, gaining the weight, losing the weight, gaining the weight. And she had gone through many cycles of metabolic readaptation. And so then she tried semaglutide, which of course makes sense. Why would she not want to try it? And did not see any weight loss. I think within 3 months, she lost 2 pounds despite being titrated up. And it was really frustrating for her. And I was new to the whole world and felt frustrated with her. But I was wondering if, because she had already started with a really low metabolic rate, really low muscle mass, if that impacted why this medication didn't work for her, or if it was more because who knows what the compound med actually was.
You know, I think it's the second. And also, it doesn't mean that the medicines are going to work for you. So if somebody has a lower appetite threshold, they're not eating as much, it may or may not work. Like there is definitely a certain insulin resistance profile I look for. And then I am looking to see, like, is it matching? So we wouldn't want to keep somebody on a medication. And if they're not losing weight, we don't want to make it about them. It just means that therapy did not work for them.
Gotcha.
And I can think of other pharmacological tools that could help in a case like that. So we really want to listen and lean into it. Because I do have some people who maybe lose a little bit of weight on the GLP-1s, but then it takes adding on another medication to really help the person. Because you mentioned it, and I'll just touch on it briefly, compounded medications, no matter, I shouldn't say no matter, we could probably delete that part, but compounded medications aren't regulated the same way as FDA-approved branded medications like Wegovy, Mounjaro, Zepbound, Ozempic are. The drug manufacturers are under a lot of regulation by the FDA to produce to the same purity standards to get the same exact medication to you every single time when it's Wegovy, Saxenda, or Zepbound. There is no variability there. When something is compounded, the loophole here is we're trying to say these medications are compounded the same way that maybe, say, Tylenol could be compounded. But the difference is that the substance for acetaminophen, the raw material is readily available in the purest form, so it can be done. This raw material isn't. It's not coming from the drug manufacturers directly. It's being manufactured in other facilities elsewhere, and it's being imported in. I'm not quite sure where the channels are, but it's not the same type of bioavailability. And there are times where these molecules are being sold in the salt form. So if it's a semaglutide salt, a tirzepatide salt, and scary, a retatrutide salt, which hasn't even made the market yet, those are products designed for animal use. Mm. So those are for animal use, but they're sold. So you want to make sure that you're not taking the salt form of these medicines. And the next piece is I kind of just have this rule of like, would I give it to my mother?
Yeah.
And or like myself. And to me, I don't feel confident enough to recommend it. So I'm not blaming anybody or anything else. I would just say like proceed with caution. That's all. Like proceed with caution. And I think the kicker, the thing that kicks like hurts me the most is if somebody actually has insurance coverage for the brand medicine. So if you want to know if you have insurance coverage, you can call your insurance company. You can ask them if you have obesity medicine coverage. You can ask them by name if they cover Wegovy or if they cover Zepbound. There is a lot of paperwork that occurs with this, so it might be covered, but you and your healthcare professional may just have to go through the paperwork. But if you have coverage, like check first, like check to see if you have coverage. The next thing is like, see if you can get another medication that could help you, and then be wise when you're choosing some of these other options. So I think the kicker is like if somebody actually has coverage and yet they're still getting the compounded, or maybe I would even go as far as saying counterfeit source.
I like that you brought up, you would ask yourself, would you give this to your mother? I think about that in my own situation, and I would be pretty upset if my mother went and got some potentially counterfeit semaglutide from a source that may just be trying to make a profit. And I won't go into that now, but what I've heard from a lot of clients and patients who have visited maybe med spas that have compound semaglutide is that they are passing it out like candy to people who don't meet that criteria that you mentioned to me earlier, people who do not even have a BMI of 27 and don't have chronic conditions. And that's a little bit worrisome to me when I think about the risks of this medication. Just from my lens, I'm concerned about people who maybe only want to lose 10 or 15 pounds, even though they're a relatively healthy body weight, because they want to look like they did before they had kids, or people who have a really strong history of eating disorders and haven't met with a medical doctor or a psychologist to really talk through the risks of it. The other concern that I have, and I had learned this from you on our first podcast, and I'll admit, at first I was a little shocked. I was like, oh, these medications are for life. Now it makes complete sense to me. What are your concerns about people who decide to use the medication, no matter where they got it from, intermittently, meaning they take the medication knowing that in 12 months, 18 months, or even less, they will go off the medication?
Yeah, so the reality is that we're in this world where if we have brand name medications, there's the best way to access these medicines is through insurance. And if your insurance does not cover it, if it's unavailable, there's a cost barrier. There's so many reasons why somebody may come off of the medicine. And then the other reason could be a person just wants to. So if a person wants to not be on medicine anymore, I kind of navigate it with my patients where when we get to their when we reach that point where they want to try to come off of the medicine, I really look to see, okay, if we're coming off, can we use this intermittently? Like, can we space it out? And then really just see like how a person is responding. All the studies show that there is a weight recurrence. So they may not regain all the weight, but there is weight recurrence. And so to lose all the weight, to come off of a medicine and have a major rebound, I just don't think that's why a person like invested this much in themselves to be on this journey. So to me, it would make more sense to find a way with patients to see what can we reasonably do. For my patients who have not had access to their medication, I am really relying heavily on lifestyle interventions, and I'm switching them to other anti-obesity medicines. And really it's just to see, like, can we prevent all that weight regain from occurring? And part of the counseling early on with lifestyle interventions is, like earlier I said, 150 minutes of exercise may be too much, but to prevent weight recurrence at the end of everything, it's about 300 minutes of exercise. So if we start with 30 minutes initially, a couple times a week, or even 10 minutes to get you started, in the future, the horizon, I'm really going to want that to be closer to an hour. And so it's not that you can't do it. I know people can. It's more of like growing into that capacity and capability of doing it. So
okay, we can't start from zero altogether. Exercise to an hour a day. And even exactly. Before these medications became available, I mean, the studies about weight regain always emphasize that people can lose weight with a dietary intervention, you know, exactly. In certain populations, but the people who could maintain the weight loss would be people who have an exercise program. And I wasn't familiar that now it's 300 minutes, which can probably feel very overwhelming to people. But like you said, with the right lifestyle interventions, with the right support and finding the right exercise for you, it's very doable. And even somebody who is on the medication would benefit from
absolutely
reaching this goal, just in case something happens where your insurance changes or you don't have access to the medication, or if the worst case scenario happens, there was a shortage, it would be in their best interest to be as prepared as possible for the unexpected. You know, speaking of that, when you and I were texting, you mentioned, you know, potentially drug shortages one day. I'm curious about that because I know that with the rise in use of amphetamines and Adderall, that was a big deal for a lot of people. They weren't able to get those medications. Do you foresee something like that happening with injections?
It's absolutely. It's actually been happening. And so that's actually why a lot of these compounding manufacturers are available, because there is a shortage. So the demand is high, the supply is low, and there is a drug shortage. So for the next 3 to 5 years, we're going to be in this landscape of manufacturers not being able to meet the demand. And at any point, it can happen. So Wegovy, for instance, the starting dose is like not available. And it hasn't been for quite some time. We can get it in small spurts, but it's very, very, it's just not available. They have manufactured the higher doses so people can continue with their medication. But the starting doses, there is not much availability. Zepbound is available. Saxenda has had some supply chain issues. So really, it's this interesting landscape where drugs are coming in, drugs are coming out. So what I tell when I'm discussing with patients is just be aware, like keep on top of your refills, continue communication with your pharmacy. Don't be alarmed if like it's not there.
Yeah, that alone, if I were a person considering going on a weight loss injection, would be very motivating for me to work with a doctor like you or a DO, because that's just so much information. And I don't think the general population knows that, or understands that and what that means. And I'd want somebody on my team to help me navigate which medications are available and what to switch or add on or modify in the safest, most effective way. So like you said, if you're listening to this and you're wondering about weight loss injections, take the time to contact your insurance company. It's worth it. I mean, sure, you might have to be on hold with somebody, with a representative. It may not be the most pleasant experience, but it's going to be worth it, because then you can, you know, have a FDA approved medication and potentially work with someone like Dr. Shaw. So, you know, as we wrap up today, I wanted to ask you, how can people work with you. If they want to meet with you and talk about weight loss injections and what's right for them, where do they find you? And do they have to be local to Orlando?
So local to Florida. And I am in Lake Nona, so within Orlando. Basically, that's it. So I'm in Lake Nona, Orlando, Florida. I can see patients throughout the state. And if I feel that I need an in-person visit for a medical reason, then I would just discuss that with the patient. But most classes of medications, we can provide telehealth care. I just like that in-person touch, so I can't go fully remote. But I'm here to help people. I did want to add, I do have a guide that I'll share with you about the anti-obesity medications, what obesity is, and also how and what to ask insurance companies when you call them. It follows along with what we've discussed in this podcast. So think of it as like fancy show notes or the Cliff Notes version with some more details. It might go over the top for some people, but the method of like what to ask when you call the insurance company is laid out there.
Oh, okay. I'm going to need that guide.
Yeah. I'll give it to you.
Is that on your website or can I link that directly in the show notes?
We can link it in the show notes.
Okay, cool. So I'll have you send that to me. I'll put it in the show notes, and then I'll also put your website and your contact information, as well as my contact information. Yeah. Because, you know, if you're going to go on a weight loss injection, why not go all in and really learn about how to optimize your health, your lifestyle, your wellness by learning about food and understanding food's role in your body. It's not just about weight loss. It's about how you show up in the world every day and how you feel and who you become using these tools. So taking a full body approach is the way I'd recommend.
I do too. I think that if we're looking at just an investment in ourselves, sometimes when the biology is right, all the stuff that we have wanted to create for ourselves finally starts happening. And it's just like this next level. Like it's just next level for some people. Like they've been struggling so long to finally have something that helps. It's just life changing.
Absolutely. I couldn't have said it better myself. Yeah. Well, thank you, Dr. Nikita Shaw, for coming back on the Nutrition Awareness Podcast. Hopefully we can do like a yearly thing because
I would love it. Yeah.
Ever evolving. And I had so many other questions. And in fact, I won't talk about it today, but I'm definitely curious about the impact of these weight loss injections on fertility. And I keep reading studies about that. So it is a really exciting time, like you said, to be in this field. Thank you again for being here.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Nutrition Awareness Podcast. And if you did find it helpful and want to share it with the whole world, screenshot this episode and tag us on Instagram in your stories at nutrition.awareness so we can connect with you.
To get notified about the next episode of Nutrition Awareness, be sure to hit subscribe so you never miss an episode.
And to create your own personalized nutrition plan with us, be sure to schedule your virtual or in-person consultation on our website, www.orlandodietitian.com.
Now get out there, fuel up, and live your healthiest life. We'll see you on the next episode.